Hi everyone, my name is Mr. Barlow, and welcome to episode 31 of the VCE Biology Podcast. This episode covers part of Unit 3, Area of Study 2, and I'll be talking about immunity and the way that the immune system works in both specific and non-specific immunity. The immune system has this wonderful ability to distinguish foreign material from material that's made by the body. So, material made by the body's own cells is called self, and foreign material is called non-self. And some examples of foreign material is dust or pollen or viruses or microorganisms like bacteria or snake venom or something like that. And what the immune system does is, when a person becomes infected with foreign material, the immune system is activated and it tries to get rid of the foreign material so that no harm or no damage is done to the body. Now, the immune system has two different types of responses. The first one is non-specific immunity, and this basically acts in the exact same way for every type of infection. So it doesn't matter what type of non-self material enters the body or is on the body, non-specific immunity will try and get rid of it the exact same way. Now, specific immunity is the different type of response, and specific immunity involves the production of special chemicals called antibodies, and specific immunity actually has a memory so that when another infection of the same type or from the same organism occurs, an increased or an improved response is generated. Now, non-specific immunity starts with the very first line of defense, and that is keeping bad stuff out of our bodies. And we do this several different ways. For example, we have skin, and the skin helps protect us from infection. It acts as a barrier against entry of microorganisms. When you're cut or something, that can allow the entry of bacteria or viruses. And the skin also produces these fatty acids and sweat, and these kind of things also inhibit the growth of bacteria. Another of the first line of defense, a non-specific immunity, is the production of mucus in the respiratory tract, in your nose. So the mucus traps some non-self material, and we can then, blow it out your nose, for example. The body also has lots of natural secretions, and many of these secretions contain antibacterial agents. For example, tears and saliva contain a chemical called lysozyme, and that causes bacteria to burst open. Acid in the stomach kills bacteria. Milk contains an antimicrobial enzyme. We also have natural flora, so we also have lots of bacteria growing in our bodies. And that's another type of defense because the presence of the natural flora, so the bacteria inside us, inhibits the growth of pathogenic bacteria, so they're more able to compete. So that's, the first line of defense. That's our first way of fighting off disease. Now, if the first line of defense fails and we can't keep bad stuff out, basically, and some bad stuff gets into our bodies, the second line of defense kicks in. And this is a series of responses that are also non-specific, so they act the same for every single type of infection, and a series of different things happen. So one of these second line of defense mechanisms involves some very special white blood cells called phagocytes. And these are basically cells which engulf and destroy microorganisms and other foreign material. They literally, eat it up. And there are different types of phagocytes. There's neutrophils and monocytes and macrophages and natural killer cells. So these all help to basically destroy material as soon as it enters the bloodstream. There's also some special proteins called complement proteins. And these are a type of blood protein that assist phagocytes. And what they do is they stick to invading microorganisms, and those microorganisms then become more readily identifiable as foreign, and the phagocytes are more easily able to engulf them or eat them up or, get rid of them, basically. These complement proteins can also work to stimulate phagocytes to become more active. They can attract phagocytes to the site of infection, and they can also destroy the membranes of invading bacteria. Another mechanism in the second line of defense are some special proteins called interferons. And these basically act on uninfected cells, and they make uninfected cells more resistant to a virus if some cells in the body have already been infected with a virus, so they help protect the body. Another group of proteins called cytokines also help the immune system to fend off disease by basically acting as messengers between cells of the immune system. And lastly, in terms of the second line of defense, there's inflammation. So inflammation, you know, is when you get a swelling around an infection. And this works basically when the blood vessels dilate a bit. So this increases the amount of blood going to the area. Capillary walls become more permeable to phagocytes, so phagocytes can go out and get the bad stuff more easily. And also, when an infection happens in a particular spot, phagocytes release some histamine, so some special chemicals, and they work to attract even more phagocytes. So we've got this non-specific immunity, which really helps to fight off foreign material as soon as it enters our bodies. Now, the third line of defense basically involves specific immunity. So specific immunity involves some special blood cells, some special white blood cells known as lymphocytes, which are produced in the bone marrow. And basically, they recognize invading cells or foreign material. They react to the invasion, but really importantly, they remember the particular type of invader. And this is good because the next time the body experiences that same infection, it's able to respond far more quickly and it does a far better job of fighting off the disease. Now, there's basically two types of lymphocytes involved in specific immunity. There's B lymphocytes or B cells and T lymphocytes or T cells. And both of these types of cells are produced in the bone marrow, but T cells mature in the thymus. So thymus starts with T, T cells are called T cells. So B cells and T cells are really great because they have the ability to recognize self cells, so cells that are part of the body, and they also recognize non-self things that get into the body, so, you know, foreign material. Now, all cells have got protein markers on the surface of their cells, and genes encode for proteins. So the genes that encode for the protein markers, the cluster of genes is called the major histocompatibility complex, and it's abbreviated to MHC. So they encode for the marker proteins on surface of cells. And in humans, there's two types of MHC markers. There's class 1 MHC markers, and these are found on all cells of the body except red blood cells. And there's class 2 markers, and they're only found on T cells, B cells, and some macrophages, so those white blood cells that engulf things. So importantly, cells have got these markers on them, these protein markers on the surface of their cells. And what B and T cells do is they could recognize cells that have the same markers as them, and then they know that those cells are safe. So they recognize the proteins as, you know, their proteins, go, yep, that's self stuff, so I'm not going to attack it. But when something like a bacteria or a virus enters a person, the B cells and T cells recognize the foreign MHC markers on that material, and it reacts. So then an immune system kind of, it's triggered. And those MHC markers, or the things that B and T cells recognize, are called antigens. So B and T cells, those cells of the immune system, they respond to foreign antigens. So you can imagine, with all the millions of different types of bacteria and viruses there are, that there must be heaps, millions of different kinds of non-self markers. So the body must be able to have some way to recognize all of those millions of different types of non-self markers on foreign material. So what happens is, B cells have these really special proteins on their surface called immunoglobulins, or they're also called antibodies. So antibodies have a very specific structure. It's kind of like a Y shape. And the Y shape's made up of basically four polypeptide chains. And each different antibody has a different antigen binding site. So a specific antigen will only bind to a specific antibody on a particular B cell. So there are millions and millions of foreign non-self MHC markers out there in the big bad world. So as a result, we've got millions and millions of B cells, which have each got antibodies on their surface specific for one particular type of antigen. So although we've got millions of different types of B cells, we've only got a few B cells which are specific for one type of foreign antigen. So if we were infected by, you know, millions of bacteria, a few B cells wouldn't be enough to launch a counterattack against all those bacteria. So we'd possibly get really sick and die. But what happens is we've got a way for those number of B cells to reproduce significantly so that then they can launch a counterattack. So what happens is, when one B cell recognizes a foreign antigen, it replicates rapidly via a process called clonal expansion. And this produces heaps of B cells, and lots of those B cells then go on to form what's called plasma cells. And plasma cells basically secrete the particular type of antibody that binds to the invading antigen. So we end up with heaps of plasma cells, and they are secreting millions and millions of antibodies, and all those antibodies are then released into the body fluids, and they go around finding the foreign antigens and binding to them. Now, this process of clonal expansion can actually take quite a long time, like days and days, and during that time, the invading bacteria might have the chance to reproduce to get to, you know, enormous numbers. And so if that happens, a person can get quite sick before enough antibodies have been generated to fight the bacteria. Fortunately, during this first, you know, the first time you've been infected by a particular bacteria, for example, some of the B cells, which replicate rapidly, end up differentiating into special cells called B memory cells. So B memory cells have the same antibodies on their surface, so they're specific to the same antigens of the invading material. But B memory cells can survive for years, and in some cases for life. So what happens if you're infected with the same foreign material again, so maybe the same bacteria again, because you've got those B memory cells, which can remember those specific antigens, they can react much faster and produce lots and lots of antibodies far, far quicker. This is basically, you know, you're said to be immune to the disease if you've got these B memory cells, which can on a second immune response produce lots of antibodies really, really quickly, and you basically fight off the disease before you even know you've got it. So that's specific immunity. So B cells are involved in specific immunity because they recognize antigens, foreign antigens. They produce plasma cells, which produce heaps and heaps of antibodies. And they also produce B memory cells, which can remember a particular antigen. And this provides a person with immunity. Now, T lymphocytes, or T cells, are also involved in specific immunity. And they're somewhat similar to B cells. There's only a few of each type of T cell which can recognize a specific antigen. But after encountering their specific antigen, just like B cells, T cells reproduce rapidly. T memory cells also form. But importantly, a big difference is that T cells don't produce antibodies. So T cells are actually involved in a special type of immunity called cell-mediated immunity or cellular immunity. And there are different types of T cells. So there's helper T cells. And these are a type of T cells, and they basically, you know, work with the immune system to stimulate B cells to produce more antibodies. There's also cytotoxic T cells, and these are another type of T cell. And what they do is that they recognize and kill a body's own cells that have been infected by a virus. So if, you know, you've got one cell which has been infected by a virus, a cytotoxic T cell will come and kill that cell before the virus replicates in that cell, and that cell then lyses and millions more virus particles are released into the body. So that's helper T cells and cytotoxic T cells, and they're involved in cellular immunity. Now, B and T cells, or B and T lymphocytes, although they're produced in the bone marrow and T cells mature in the thymus, they both circulate in the lymphatic system. So what will happen is, the doctor will actually feel your lymph nodes when you're sick. So because, B and T cells circulate in the lymphatic system, your lymph nodes will become swollen and sore when you've got some sort of an infection. Now, how do you get immunity, or how do you acquire specific immunity to a specific disease? Well, it's actually a couple of different ways. The first one is there's active immunity, and this develops when the person is making its own antibodies against a particular antigen. But there's also passive immunity, and this happens when an individual gets antibodies made by another organism. For example, a baby might receive antibodies from its mother. And while passive immunity is good in that it does provide immediate protection against a disease, it's not so good in that it doesn't provide long-lasting immunity. So passive immunity does fade rather quickly. Now, active immunity can be acquired in two ways. So there's natural active immunity, and that's basically the body comes into contact with a particular disease-causing organism, you know, which has got antigens on the surface of its cells, and then the body creates B memory cells, and then you're immune. Another type of active immunity is, it's called induced active immunity, and it's basically vaccines, it's vaccination. So vaccines, they normally contain either dead or treated living microorganisms, so they're called attenuated. So these are living organisms but unable to cause disease. And these are used to activate the immune system to produce antibodies, but they don't cause the disease. So you inject something into the body which tricks the immune system into developing antibodies, but it doesn't actually make the person sick. So it just gives you immunity. So that's induced active immunity. Now, induced active immunity by vaccination is actually one of the great advances in medicine. So the number of diseases, or the incidence of a number of diseases, including smallpox and tetanus and polio and diphtheria and measles and mumps and rubella, has decreased massively since we've started vaccinating people against these diseases. And, you know, measles, mumps, rubella and tetanus, you probably have heard of them as things that I hope you've been vaccinated against. So you're immune, most likely, to tetanus. Awesome. Now, passive immunity can actually also be acquired in two ways, naturally or induced. So a natural passive immunity, this is basically a fetus developing in the womb receives maternal antibodies across the placenta, or a baby can receive antibodies through the mother's milk. And induced passive immunity is basically an injection of antibodies into your bloodstream. But again, passive immunity does not last for a lifetime. It does fade over a short period of time. So there you go. Immunity, it's just fantastic. It stops us getting diseases and it stops us dying. Can't complain about that. So that brings this episode of... Actually, it doesn't bring this episode to a close, because there are some bad things associated with immunity. And there's quite a few bad things associated with, the process of immunity. The first one of these is allergies. So people can get sensitized to particular antigens like dust or pollen or things like that. And what happens is, if they're exposed to these particular antigens, these special cells called mast cells, which are cells in the immune system, can release enormous amounts of histamine. So it's basically an allergic reaction. But histamine can cause contraction of smooth muscle, like the muscle leading to the lungs. If you have a bad enough allergic response, that those muscles can contract so much that you can't breathe anymore. And obviously, if you can't breathe, then you can die. So allergies are a pretty bad thing associated with immunity. Another problem with immunity is rhesus incompatibility. So human blood can be classified as either rhesus positive or rhesus negative. And this relates to the Rh factor, rhesus factor, on the surface of their red blood cells. So if a rhesus negative mother, so she doesn't have the Rh factor on her red blood cells, has a rhesus positive child at birth, this can then activate an immune response in the mother, so she can basically become immune to rhesus positive things. And this is bad, because if the mother becomes pregnant again with another rhesus positive baby, her immune system can attack the fetus, and that's no good for the fetus. It can, it gets disease, it can be fatal. Fortunately, we've developed a treatment for rhesus incompatibility, so the disease can be avoided now. And right about now, you might be thinking, yeah, but why doesn't a mother's immune system always attack a fetus which is growing inside her uterus? Well, the answer to that is that the placenta acts as a selective barrier to antibodies. So if anti-fetus antibodies are made in the mother, they're absorbed by the cells in the placenta, so they're prevented from crossing into the womb, and so they don't end up attacking the fetus. So it's quite a nifty little arrangement. Now, some other problems with the immune system is a class of autoimmune diseases, and these are basically diseases which happens when the immune system attacks its own cells, or it attacks self cells. An example of this is multiple sclerosis. So this is a disease of the central nervous system, and it's basically where there's a breakdown of the fatty myelin sheath that surrounds nerve cells. This can obviously be catastrophic to the sending of messages around the nervous system. The immune system can sometimes work to reject transplanted organs. So if you, you know, have a heart transplant, you get a heart from somebody else. Clearly that heart is not going to be self. So it's going to be, there's going to be, it's foreign material. So there's a big risk that your immune system is going to attack the new heart. So if this, when you, you know, when people do transplant organs, it's really important that donors are tried, you know, they're tried to be as matched as closely as possible to the recipient. So they're, major histocompatibility complex markers are tried, they attempt to match them as close as possible. And there are also drugs available that inhibit the immune response so that, you know, the organ isn't rejected. Now, there are also immune deficiency diseases, and by far the most famous one of these is acquired immune deficiency syndrome, or AIDS. And this is caused by the human immunodeficiency virus, or HIV. So what HIV basically does is that it kills T helper cells. And as we know, T helper cells help stimulate B cells to produce antibodies. So you're really at risk at from your immune system not being able to fend off disease if you've got AIDS. And because your body can't fight off disease, what happens is you develop a number of opportunistic diseases. So normally you don't die of AIDS. You die of some other disease which has infected your body because your immune system doesn't work and you basically can't fight it off. And that brings episode 31 of the VCE Biology podcast to a close. And it also brings unit 3 of the VCE Biology podcast to a close. I'm Mr. Barlow, and thanks very much for listening.